305 Bridgeport Way, Tacoma, Washington. This interview was done at the Tacoma Library on November 25th, 1975. It was done by Ruth L. Wett, Tacoma Public Library. This is a tape original. This is a taped interview with Mr. Julius Tolleson. Correction. Before we start, could I go ahead and get your full name on the tape?
Yes. My name is Julius Jenny Tolleson, born in Saftan, Rognan, Saftan, Norway. Rognan is about 50 miles north of the Arctic Circle, and Bodø is the first city north of the Arctic Circle. And so, when I was 13 years old, I was sent out to some of my relatives to go out fishing in the summertime. I was still in school age. And the school there, of course, was 16 weeks a year, was all the schooling we had. There was 2 weeks at school, 2 weeks off. So we studied in between the 2 weeks. And I had 7.5 years of grade school. And I graduated when I was 14. But when I went out before the summer before I graduated from grade school. And then I had an uncle and he had a freighter that sailed along the coast there. And I was with him when I was 14 and 15 years old. But when I was 15, I was in Lofoten fishing codfish, which is the fishing area of Norway. And that summer, I was out to the islands out in Norway fishing and freighting in the fall and in the summer. As you realize, the fishing season is in the winter time in the Lofoten Islands, and they have the summer season that they also fish. And so, I'll turn it off. In 1916, I also was in Lofoten Islands for salt cod fish for export. And and one day my father came to me and he said, "Well, there is no future in you going out fishing and sailing along the coast. There's no money in it in the first place. And you have to learn a trade. That's the only future you will have. And there is an opportunity here for an apprentice, either in the blacksmith trade or in the shoemaker trade." Well, I decided that I would rather be a blacksmith than sitting on a bench sewing shoes all day. So I consented to take the apprenticeship as a blacksmith. And there was a man that came from Suritama mining district there, and he started a blacksmith shop there, and that's how the apprenticeship came up. And I worked very hard. I had 25 crowns for the first year, 50 crowns for 3 year apprenticeship, 50 crowns for the second, and 75 for the third, which of course is used to, see there was 4 crowns to a dollar, or less than 4 crowns to a dollar. So, when I had been there 8 months with him, and there was a bricklayer that's been over in Brooklyn, New York. And he thought this blacksmith, of course he was not a blacksmith, but he was a machinist. And he had going through his schooling as a machinist, as a blacksmith, which at that time took 5 years. 3 years as blacksmith and 2 years as a machinist. So he said, "You're such a wonderful, handy man, can do everything in the shop and the machines. You go over to Brooklyn where you can really make some money. You're not making any money here." And don't you know that he took him into deciding to sell his shop there and go over to Brooklyn. But he wouldn't go as I was with him. So he insisted that I was to go with him, and he was quite a drunkard. You'd get drunk twice a week, just as sure as the day. And that was a drawback. But he had—he was up in his 40s, or past 40, and he had 9 children. And his wife at Rutherford's, which is near Trondheim. And they were on the Strait, and that's how he came up north to work in the mines there as their parent. Well, of course, I didn't have any money. Well, he says, "I'll give you the $50, or 50 crowns in total, crowns now. And then I'll pay your ticket from here to Trondheim." Well, I didn't have shoes, I didn't have clothes, didn't have a suit, and I needed 100 crowns more to buy a ticket. So my father went to my cousin and he borrowed the 100 crowns, and I went to a cousin of my mother at a store, and he trusted me for a pair of shoes and a suit of clothes. And here I was on the way. And we came on the boat, we were going to Trondheim, and of course this blacksmith, he was drinking and got drunk, and I told him, I said, "Now, from now on you got to stop drinking." And he was a wonderful person that way, no matter what I told him, he would listen to me. And here I was just a boy, and yet he wouldn't listen to growing up, but he would listen to me what I said. And I said, "Now if you don't stop drinking, I'm going to leave, and we come to Trondheim, and we'll go back home." Well, he promised he was going to quit drinking. And he did. Anyway, we got to Trondheim, and I paid 142 crowns for a ticket from Trondheim to New York, which from there on I took 4 where we went to over the North Sea and over to England, in Liverpool, and I found that I only had $2 when I came to New York, and it wasn't quite $2 at that, and I had to show $10 in order to get through any side. And so this blacksmith here said, "I'll loan you $10 so you don't have to go back." Of course, Eli Simon was rather new at that time. See, that was built in 1945. I know if you'd be in there. But that is a man-made island, you may say. The government spent $6 million to build this island out so as to release the immigration traffic at New York, what's called Battery Park now. And that was it was called really silent. And I had to show these $10, and I got through and we got over to Brooklyn. I had no relatives or friends especially. There was one person that met his wife that came over and took us for a cup of coffee, and we went down to downtown in Brooklyn, and we got to a boarding house, and we got boarding room there for 4.5 weeks. And so, of course, I had only $10, I still had it. And I paid my 4.5 for the first week. I was hunting for a job all over, couldn't find a job. Because I had the disadvantages, in the first place, of being young, didn't know the language, and didn't know the situations here.
Did you speak any English when you came to
the United States? I couldn't speak a word of English. I couldn't speak a word of English. I couldn't even order a meal. So, here the second week came, and I had to pay the 4.5 for another week and see if I couldn't get a job, and I didn't get a job. And meanwhile, we had parted then, actually. And I was seeing a Danish woman she had an apartment room there that she spared and rented out once in a while. Of course, that was an income. Person was scarce, of course, she went down there to Hamilton Avenue, Hill Street. So I've been out at 6 o'clock every morning. It's a 10-hour day at that time, so I had to get up 6 o'clock in the morning and run around and see if I could get a job. And the only one that offered a job was a horseshoe shop. They had those big draft horses, and he said, "No, you can go ahead and shoe those horses." I shouldn't do that. So anyway, here I was without money, and I owed the landlady 35 cents, and it bothered me. Here I was, I didn't have a friend, didn't have a relative, I had no place to go. And if you had been in my situation, the way I felt, you'd never forget it. You were lonely out in a strange world without being able to speak to people, and no money, no work. And it can't be described the way I felt. So one morning I had been looking for work, and I was sitting on the steps. Of course, the steps there near the sidewalk there, they don't set the house there, back there. And I guess I had my head in my fist or something. And a man came up the sidewalk, and he looked over and he called on me and asked if I was working, and shook my hand, and my head was broken. And then he understood that I didn't understand what he said. So he spoke Norwegian to me. And he said, "I'm third mate on a ship that runs between New York. It's a freight and passenger ship that runs between New York, Newport News, and Norfolk, Virginia. And we need two men. Have you ever been out to sea before?" I says, "You know, the Norwegians, that's all they have is fishing and sailing on the coast there. We sell that down." Well, he says, "You got the job." And I was so happy. I was so happy, I just ran up to the room, had a suitcase with all my work belonging. And I ran up and grabbed it, and I was afraid I was going to lose that man, but I didn't have time to stop and tell the landlady or anything. I just turned there, and I got the job and got on the boat. And of course, this was a boat with the Old Dominion line. And so the the boat was so, in other words, the condition on the boat was so bad that they always had a job for somebody. Of course, they had to put a big crew on that boat. Well, I made two trips, and then I found out that there was a boat on Pier 19 on East River. This other boat was on the West River. And they paid $10 more a month. This Dominion line paid $25 a month. And this other boat would pay $35 a month. And it was running between New York and Bridgeport, Connecticut. All right. I found out that there was a job open, and I went over there and got the job. And so the conditions there was 4 hours off, 8 hours on, and 4 hours off during the 24 hours. So we had to take, and all the truckers had to be organized there so that we could store the freight on the boat. That was our job. And we had Sunday off over in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Well, all right. Then I got sick. And I had to go ashore. I had tonsillitis, just in trouble. But meanwhile, I used to hang around the Salvation Army a good deal in Brooklyn in the evenings. And I met a fellow there that I'd never seen before. He was Norwegian. He told me about Dr. Nils Kamp, was his name. He was studying for doctor in Oslo. Failed on his final examination, he went to Brooklyn and started the drug school. And he was the new Congress savior, but they got sick, of course. Most of them didn't have any money. But he would examine them and sell them a little drug, you know. And so I did go to see him, and he gave me some medicine. And in 2-3 days, I was all right. Go back to work. Meanwhile, I had a brother that left there in Norway in 1905 for Duluth and Superior, and he had found out, in other words, he had come to Tacoma in December 1907. And originally, he was going to work for the railroad company, but not really. He didn't work for them. He started clearing the woods. And he had gotten my address in New York from home, and he wrote me a letter, and he said, if you like to come out west, he says, I'll send you a ticket. And so I said, yes, I was just planning on finding a ship that would go around Cape Horn and up to the West Coast. Well, he says, you take the train, there's an excursion now, and you take the train and come out here. And that was in May.
Do you remember anything about the train coming out here?
Well, of course, that was a problem. I had to I had to go to New Jersey. Of course, there was no train coming into New York properly at that time. There was no tunnels. But meanwhile, I probably should tell you that after I got cured from the tonsillitis, I got a job in the subway tunnel, the first tunnel that drove under the Hudson River in 1907 between Brooklyn and New York, and it was connecting up with Coney Island, eventually. And I worked there for 3-4 days, what it was, and I got the bends. And so I sat down, I couldn't get my shoes on one morning, and I thought, well, which is worst of the two evils, to be broke or be sick? And I decided it was better to be rather than broke than to be sick. So I quit. And then I went back on the boat again. And when I happened got the letter from my brother, I managed to find the ferry, the New Jersey ferry, to take you over to New Jersey where you could get the radar. And they had people that on the radio stations there, and the officers that could speak Norwegian. It was very hard in New York at that time for anybody to get a job in a store that couldn't speak at least two languages, the English and the German, or the English and the Swedish, or the Norwegian, you know, because that was their big trade, you know. And the same with the Italians. Each store seemed to have a clerk that could speak the different languages. Then, so I came over on to Chicago, and there I got the Northern Pacific train. And it took 6 days before I got from New York to Tacoma. It was slow trains, coal burners, and some would open the windows and get all the cinders into the coaches. And so I got to Tacoma, and he told me to look up the Northern Hotel where I got to the depot. It was just about 2 blocks to the right when you got off the train, the depot. And the depot here was just well, they have a tool shed down there that used to be the depot. That's before they built the depot that we have today. That wasn't built in 1910. Well, at least I didn't know just where to go, and there was a man with a buggy and his two-seated buggy he had there, and he used to take the passengers to the hotel. That was the transportation they had instead of the taxis. And so he says, there's nobody there. And so he says, now you get on here and I'll take you wherever you want to go. He says, well, I don't know. Okay, well, maybe I wouldn't have to pay. Of course, I didn't have enough money to really get it first, but I had $2. And so I told him I wanted to go to the hotel in Arden. And we drove up here on Pacific Avenue. Below the sick man was nothing but a scrap iron junk jars in there, you know, at that time. And he evidently misunderstood me. Of course, I couldn't speak very clearly. And so he thought evidently that I wanted to go to Hotel Norge. And there was a lady from my neighborhood in Norway, or from Bodø, and had the Hotel Norge up by Gallup Avenue, that area. That was sort of the center of town. It was intended to be, or time. But I knew that I had to go to the right instead of the left. So I thought he was going to do something to me, you know. So I jumped out of this wagon and just jumped while he was driving. And I started walking along and I found 10 Oregon and 15 and Pacific Avenue. Of course, there was a sign there. And there was a suite that ran that hotel there. And he had lost one leg, you know, so he had a wooden big leg. But he was all right, he gave me a room. And I was there for 2 days. And nobody showed up. My brother said somebody would show up, get me somewhere else. To Old Town, to Mrs. Erickson, she had a boarding house in Old Town. And meanwhile, I walked up around, was that even up to Wright's Park? Walked around, walked all along Gay Street, and got to 17th Gay Street, and I saw a church that looked just like the church we had in Norway. The church where I was baptized, confirmed, and married by the same minister. And I went over and I looked at the sign outside, and here it is in Norwegian, where Frelle says, Evangeliske Lutherske Kirke. And the next Sunday I was in church. Because I knew God was the one that guided me and helped me, and there was no one else that could ever do it. And that's one thing I never let go of, and that was my God. And that was the last thing my mother asked me, and she put the New Testament in my signatures. Well, anyway, I got there, and finally the next day, someone came with me to the boarding house, and the newcomers and employment place was the Old Town Sawmill. They hired more men there than they always had a turnover. So I got a job, and then my mother brother came and says, I got a job for you up in the woods, and 3 miles from Orting up here. And the boss there said that he'd give me a job. Sure, I got up there. And I didn't go to the sawmill. And he looked at me and says, I can't keep that poor job.
So, was your brother older than you?
Yes, he's 2 years older. And he was working there. Then he got mad and he quit, just because I didn't get a job. So here I was. But meanwhile, I went down to the camp, St. Paul Cumberland. I had a camp there, I had a mile away from there, and here I got a job. And of course my brother had left, and I never saw anything of it. Then till the 4th of July, and this was in May. And in fact, it was the 23rd of May.
That was 1907? Was that the year 1907?
That was in 1907, yes. Well, I worked there in that camp there all summer, and I paid all my debts, both in Norway and here, paid my brother. And I had about $150 saved up in the bank. Of course, you know, a nickel was looked as big as a wagon wheel at that time. So then they told me, then him and his partner decided they were going to go back to Norway. And I had to go with them because they couldn't leave me here alone without any relatives or friends or anything. It would be impossible. possible. I'm so young, and yet I've gotten this far already. And so they went and bought their tickets, and they got me to quit in the camp. And they went downtown here and bought the tickets. And I stopped on the other side of the street there, where they went over to the Sell and April store to sell tickets to Scandinavia. And I didn't go. I said, I'd get enough money so I'd come if I could. I went back up to the camp, and there wasn't any job for me. So the boss said, "So you're already back from Norway." Well, I went back to town, and I went into the employment office. That time they had from employment offices, and they sold me the job for so much, for $1, $1.50, or $2, depending on how much the job paid. So they had regular employment agents. So I found a place there that was open for a logger on Harstein Island. They didn't pay very much, $1.75 for the job. And I took the steamer then to the Olympia steamer, and then transferred to Olympia to Shell. No, pardon me. I took the steamer, Tigers was the name of the steamer, and it went to Harstein Island. It stopped at McNeil Island, Anderson Island, and so on. There are three brothers who have three boats, and it was Tigers, Tycone and Ticonderoga, and they were this book of sound boats we have here, passenger and freight. When I came to Harstein Island, the boat let me off on a little float, and the waves were washing over the coast. Then there was a Swede that came to the boat and took me off the float, and he asked me where I was going. I told him I was going up to the logging camp, really, Snyder logging camp. And he had what they call a spool dump here on the float. He had a cedar float, and he had a donkey on there. And there was an upright spool that take the line around there and haul the logs out of the canyons where they couldn't get into the horses because it was too wet. So he was along the ravines, you know, on the islands there, and picked up the cedar and stuff that they could get for the horses. Well, he says, "Don't you go to work for that man there." He says he'll work you 2-3 days and then he'll charge you for a board and he'll never pay you. Well, but he says, "There's a farmer up here, he's logging off in 40 acres there, he got 80 acres of timber and he's logging for the horses. I think maybe he can give you a job." His name was John Buffington. Well, so I went up there about 3/4 of a mile from the beach up there. And here, John Buffington. "Yes," he says, "I'll give you a job. I'll pay you $75 a day when you work." No, 75 cents a day, pardon me. "And you work. And you can sort of make your home here if you want to." Well, that was fine with me, because that was the 1st of November was when the Depression of 1978 started, when there wasn't any operation, hardly there was, St. Paul, Tacoma Lumber Company, which was the biggest concern here in Tacoma at that time. They couldn't get $200 cash out of any bank. And here was a situation where we had nothing but gold and silver at that time. And evidently, the story was that Wall Street pulled in the gold and the silver, and we were without money. And so the bank didn't know what to do. They had to turn in this money here. And this is just an example. When I sold my 40 acres over there for $400, I had $20 gold pieces in my pocket. I thought it was rich. Well, anyway, so the bank had to get busy overnight. They decided we were going to make our own money. And they went ahead and they printed what they called the scripts. Of course, business had to go on. The people had to eat. And there was enough copper change to get along with. And they issued this money and printed this script, blank on one side, with the denomination on the other side. And they were printed against the assets in the bank. They were perfectly all right. You had to keep track of the bank that they got, of course. And even when I went to Seattle, I had to go to the exchange there and exchange the Kroma money for Seattle. Of course, they had to gratify the bank it came from. And so, I was working there then, and in 19, you see, this depression lasted till April. And it was during this depression that I bought these 40 acres of land on Arsene Island. But he owed me $35 to begin with, so I only paid about $90. Out of my cash. And so that was it. But then I got a job from a new concern that started a logging camp just 2 miles up the bay from Ella. It's called Detroit. And he was a lawyer from Detroit, Michigan. He was a fellow that named that called Detroit. And this timber concern in Michigan owned quite a few sort of sections, I think, of land, timber. Of course, there was a time when timber here was so cheap, they used to gave away timber land so that they could settle people on these sorts of occasions. So the Eastern logging concerns did buy up a lot of land. But here he was a lawyer, this S.W. Barker, just out of law school. He didn't know more about logging than a man in. But here he was put in charge of this here. So he builds the railroad from Allen, or from Detroit there, and up to Mason Lake, you know, up in that area they were looking. And so I worked there for a while, till the depression was over. And of course, to be exact about it, he lost about $35,000 on that loading operation. After they got through. This Barker, he was a very, very interesting person. And he was smart. And yet he went into things that he didn't know anything about. And that was his downfall. But I used to tell him a story. And he used to tell this to Kiwanis clubs and various clubs that belonged. There was a Swede that went out in the woods and looked for a job. And this company had 3 camps. And he had figured out, now I'm going to go up there and see if I can get a job, and I'm going to start at the upper camp. And if I don't get a job there, I can get the next camp, and then the next camp. So he came up to the, finally went up to the upper camp, and he asked, you get a job? Yes. He, they gave him a job. He says, how much you pay? He says, $75 a month, board. I don't think that is enough for me, he says. So he left and he went to the next camp, thought he'd get more pay there. And so he went down to the next camp there and got a job there too. He says, how much you pay? $50 a month and board. No, I don't think that is enough for me. So he went to the third camp nearest the town, and yes, he got a job, but it was only $25 a month and board. And that was the last place he could go, so he said, you better take the job. So he took the job, and they sent him out in the woods, and he was brushing out there for the goats and the flowers. And they were following a big tree there, and here he was right in the way of that tree there. Where they were following, they hollowed timber, and he was broke, and he was taking his time. And the foreman happened to be around there, so he ran down, got him by the arm, dragged him out of there, and says, Did you hear the hollered timber? You had to get out of the way? Yes, he says. I says, why didn't you run? He says, you think I'm going to run for $25 a month? No, by his arm ago. You must remember running for $25 a month.
What kind of jobs did you do with a lot of your camps?
I've done everything that you can describe. Even to run a camp. Even had my own camp. Well, anyway, I left there, and I think they had to shut down there for a while, and I went back to St. Paul to come and come in. And the depression was over. Well, I went back up to the camp, and there wasn't any job. So the boss said, so you're already back from Norway. Well, I went back to town and I went into the employment office. That time they had from employment offices and they sold you the job for so much, for $1, $1.50, or $2, depending on how much the job paid. So they had regular employment agents. So I found a place there that was open for a logger on Christine Island. And they didn't pay very much, $1.75. I paid 75 cents for the job. And I took the steamer then to the Olympia steamer and then transferred to Olympia to Shell. No, pardon me. I took the steamer, the Tigers was the name of the steamer, and it went to Harstein Island. It stopped at McNeil Island, Anderson Island, and so on. There are three brothers who had three boats, and it was Tigers, Typhoon, and Ticonderoga. And they were this Luka sound boats we have here, the passenger and freight. When I came to Harstein Island, the boat let me off on a little float. The waves were washing over the float. Then there was a Swede who came to the boat and took me off the float. He asked me where I was going. Where I was going, I told him I was going up to the logging camp. Here is Snyder logging camp. And he had a, what they call a spool dump here on the float. Cedar float, and he had a donkey on there, and there was an upright spool that take the mine around there, and they hauled the logs out of the canyons where they couldn't get into the horses because it was too wet. So he was along the ravines, you know, along the islands there, and picked up the cedar and stuff that they couldn't get for the horses. Well, he says, don't you go to work for that man there. He says he'll work you 2-3 days and then he'll charge you for board and he'll never pay you. But he says, there's a farmer up here, he's logging off 40 acres there, he got 80 acres of timber, and he's logging with horses. I think maybe he can give you a job. His name was John Buffington. Well, so I went up there about 3/4 of a mile from the beach up there. And here, John Buffington. Yes, he says, sir, I'll give you a job. I'll pay you $75 a day when you work. No, 75 cents a day. And you're bored. And you can sort of make your home here if you want to. Well, that was fine with me. Because that was the 1st of November was when the Depression of 1978 started. When there wasn't any operation, hardly there was, well, St. Paul and Tacoma Lumber Company, which was the biggest concern here. In Tacoma at that time, they couldn't get $200 cash out of any bank. And here was a situation where we had nothing but gold and silver at that time. And evidently, the story was that Wall Street pulled in the gold and the silver and we were without money here. And so the bank didn't know what to do. They had to turn in this money here. Just an example, when I sold my 40 acres over there for $400, I had $20 gold pieces in my pocket. I thought it was rich. Well, anyway, so the bank had to get busy overnight. They decided we were going to make our own money. And they went ahead and they printed what they called the scripts. Of course, business had to go on. People had to eat. And there was enough copper change to get along with. And they issued this money and printed this script, blank on one side, with the denomination on the other side. And they were printed against the assets of the bank. They were perfectly all right. They had to keep track of the bank that they got, of course. And even when I went to Seattle, I had to go to the exchange there and exchange the Tacoma money for Seattle. Of course, they had to gratify the bank it came from. And so I was working there then, and in 19, you see, this depression lasted till April. And it was during this depression that I bought these 40 acres of land. I was in Ireland. But he owed me $35 to begin with, so I only paid about $90. Out of my cash. And so that was it. But then I got a job from a new concern that started a logging camp just 2 miles up the bay from Ella. It's called Detroit. And he was a lawyer from Detroit, Michigan. Houston, a fellow that named that called Detroit. And this timber concern in Michigan owned quite a few sort of sections, I think, or land there, timber. Of course, there was a time when timber here was so cheap, they used gave away timber land so that they could settle people on these sorts of occasions. So the Eastern logging concerns did buy up a lot of land. But here he was a lawyer, this S.W. Parker, just out of law school. He didn't know more about luck than that anymore. But here he was put in charge of this here. So he builds the railroad from Allen, or from Detroit there, and up to Mason Lake, you know, up in that area they were on. And so I worked there for a while, till the Depression was over. And of course, to be exact about it, he lost about $35,000 on that loading operation after they got through. This Barker, he was a very, very interesting person, and he was smart. Yet he went into things that he didn't know anything about. That was his downfall. But I used to tell him a story, and he used to tell this to Juana's clubs and various clubs that belonged to him. There was a Swede that went out in the woods and looked for a job. And this company had three camps, and he had figured out, now I'm going to go up there and see if I can get a job, and I'm going to start at the upper camp. And if I don't get a job there, I can get the next camp, and then the next camp. So he came up to the upper camp, and he asked, can you get a job? Yes. They give him a job. Says, how much you pay? Says, $75 a month for board. I don't think that is enough for me, he says. So he left and he went to the next camp, thought he'd get more pay there. And so he went down to the next camp there and got a job there too. Says, how much you pay? $50 a month and board. No, I don't think that is enough for me. So he went to the third camp nearest town, and yes, he got a job, but it was only $25 a month and board. And that was the last place he could go, so he said, you better take the job. So he took the job, and they sent him out in the woods, and he was brushing out there for the goats and the flowers. And they were following a big tree there, and here he was right in the way for that tree there, where they were following. They hollowed timber, and he used to go, and he was taking his time. And the foreman happened to be around there, so he ran down, got him by the arm, and dragged him out of there, and says, did you hear the hollowed timber? You had to get out of the way. Yes, he says. I says, why didn't you run? He says, you think I'm going to run for $25 a month? No, by a son of a gun. He wasn't going to run for $25 a month.
What kind of jobs did you do in the logging camps?
I've done everything that you can describe. It was even to run a camp. Even had my own camp. Well, anyway, I left there, and I think they had to shut down there for a while. And I went back to St. Paul to come along the company, and the Depression was over. Well, you want to quit now, don't you? Shall you want to quit?